This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another legendary episode of the Doxcast. I am your co-host, Josh Trumbo, and I am alone in the studio once again tonight. Our fearless leader is off on vacation, leaving me to do all of the dirty work. But I do have a special guest joining us via Skype. The radical, the gnarly, the green, Cody Miller is joining us. Cody, how are you doing tonight?
Hello. Yes, I'm doing amazing, Josh. Thank you for... Actually, I'm not doing amazing. I have a cold, so my voice sounds terrible, but it's a great time to be recording a podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we appreciate that you are braving the cold within you to join us tonight, and we'll do our best not to take your voice out of commission. My wife just got over a cold, and her voice just completely went away, so... So I'll try it. Hopefully the same won't happen to you.
Yeah, I think we'll be okay.
Excellent. Well, for those of you tuning in who don't know of Cody and his work, Cody is the creator, owner, operator of Far Off Games. He's designed board games, I believe Tavarua. Am I saying that one correctly? I forgot to ask the pronunciation on that one before we started. Zaya, Legends of a Drift System, which up until today I called Zia. We're all learning something. It's an educational podcast today.
Sorry. a lot of people pronounce it Zia, and that's totally fine with me.
As long as they don't call it Exia, that's the one that gets me. That's,
yeah, absolutely.
Like, I've had people do that, and it's like, no.
Sounds like eczema.
Yeah, which is a totally different game. And, of course, the upcoming Iridia. And I forgot the subtitle. Cue me in on that.
Iridia, The Paths We Dare Tread.
That's it.
Which is incredibly pretentious. Sorry.
But very intriguing all the same.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense given the lore of the game. So
beautiful. So we're going to get into that in a little bit. But I want to start off, whenever we have a new guest on the podcast, we like to get to know them a little bit more. So, Cody, tell us a little bit about yourself. And then bring that into what got you into the board gaming hobby and tabletop, I guess, in general.
Okay. I will do my best. So my name is Cody Miller. I'm 34 years old. I live in Oregon in the USA. And gaming has been a part of my life as far as I can remember. Being little, I think I had a lot of the same experiences that many people my age did, playing Monopoly and Chutes and Ladders and all sorts of like the mainstream board games. And they were fun when I was little, but it didn't do much for me. And then my parents got a personal computer for us. So we were not a Nintendo family. My parents refused to get us any gaming consoles when I was little. And so... they said, no, we'll get a computer, and that'll be much more educational. So I spent thousands of hours playing PC video games. So that's sort of my gaming experience. I didn't own a console until I was, like, out of high school.
Oh, wow.
So, however, I did manage to play a lot of games emulated when I was younger. So I played lots of Nintendo and everything else. But
there's always a loophole. There's always a way around.
Yeah, there's always a way around. I did learn quite a bit of skills using a PC growing up, which I am now applying in my job, which I spend a majority of the time on a PC. So thanks, Mom and Dad. as far as board games, I got into board games when, let's see, I was engaged to my wife, and I've been playing a ton of video games. And I sort of took a step back and thought, this isn't great. I'm spending, you know, too much time playing video games. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to be an adult now, kind of feeling like that. And so I took a year off of video games. And during that time, Abby, my wife, bought me a board game called Dread Pirate. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's really
played that one.
Yeah, it's not a. It's great at what it does. It's not like a really deep game. It's definitely like an entry level game, but it's really high component quality. So it comes in a treasure, like a wooden treasure box, and there's metal ships and a big cloth map that you lay out. And I started playing it. I was like, this is so cool. This is like a video game. Like you can attack people. You can go to different ports and like raid. And so from then I just started buying board games. So I went online and hey, what's this Catan game? And that Settlers of Catan took over. This is like right as everybody was discovering Settlers. So, you know, me and my wife converted everybody that we knew to Settlers. We would bring Settlers over to people's houses, play it with them, and then like leave a copy with them.
Oh, wow.
And so like we were having board game night. We started having board game night like two or three times a week just because people would call us and like, we need to play these games that you've got. So we got Carcassonne and Agricola. I forget how you say that. But all the big like German board games that were starting to come over. And that's when I really felt like, oh, man, I could make a game like this. I always wanted to make video games, but that, you know, you have to learn how to program and all that. But I could make a board game because you're just writing stuff down. And so that was like 2005 when I started working on Zaya. And back then it was very, very different to how it ended up being. And that was like a 9-year journey for me of just making this game. This, like, I didn't know anything about Board Game Geek or the Dice Tower, any of the mainstream board game things that were going on. This was just sort of me making a game for my friends. And so, like, every week I'd have everybody over and we'd play test it, and I would take notes, and everybody say, oh, this is broken, or this doesn't work, or this isn't fun, and then I'd change it, and I went through 9 years of revision. really about 8 years of revision, and then in that 9th year, I had been sort of watching Kickstarter, and I was like, I think I could put my game on Kickstarter. And this was like right after Tim Schafer with Double Fine did their game, and it went really big, and it was like, okay, I bet a board game could do really well. And then in that year, Jamie Stegmaier jumped on Kickstarter, and so I was like, yes, people can do board games. And so I was like building up during that time, and it was really scary because it's like, if somebody comes out with this idea before me, then I'm in trouble. So I was like working nights, working late. You know, Abby would be watching shows in bed, and I'd be on my laptop writing cards and rules revisions and all sorts of stuff. And yeah, so then when it went on Kickstarter, it was a big letdown in one sense, like right at first, because after to get the game that I wanted to have pre-painted miniatures, and I wanted to have metal coins and all sorts of stuff. It was so expensive. Our goal was $100,000, and that was my goal, was to be able to sell 1,000 copies and break even. And so throughout the Kickstarter campaign, like, people would just come in, they would pledge a dollar, and they'd come into the chat and be like, you'll never make it. $100,000 is too much for a board game. And then they'd leave. And it was just like, I felt like throwing up every night for like 2 weeks straight. And then other people would come in and they're like, hey, this game looks awesome. I think you should get somebody professional to help do the graphic design. Cause I had done everything myself just cause it was, yeah, it was fun. And, yeah, about halfway through the campaign, we hit our funding goal, and it was like a defining moment in my life, honestly, of like, wow, this is really happening. I'm going to make a game. And you can go on and see, like, we recorded it. It was like a very emotional moment. but yeah, from then, the Kickstarter did way better than we ever imagined. And I was working as an IT tech at our school. In our school district here, just, you know, plugging people's printers in, copy machines, yes. As you know, Josh, and just, you know, crawling under desks all day, which I love. I truly loved it there, and they were really good to me. But at the end of this campaign, it was like, I think I could do this. I think I could make another game and I could keep doing this for a little while. And so that's sort of where it's been. We've run 4 Kickstarter campaigns at this point. Mm-hmm. And because of the generosity of strangers who have believed in my crazy visions, I'm working full time making board games and loving every minute of it, except for the minutes that I have to do accounting and taxes. That's not fun. But the rest of it is super fun.
That's awesome. And really, that's so great because, you know, a lot of times you'll hear Kickstarter people talking about Kickstarter and how a lot of it seems like it's a glorified pre-order system now. And there are merits to it. And I don't want to get into all of that today. But
sure.
Really, your story is exactly what Kickstarter was built for, at least from my understanding, is that somebody with an idea and a vision could actually put it out there. And then if people believed in it, they would fund it, and then it happened, and now here you are, and you've got Far Off Games, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's truly incredible. I mean, I am thankful. If anybody who's a backer is watching or has supported me, man, thank you so much. It has really been, just a dream come true for me, and like everybody's super excited every time we do a Kickstarter, and I feel like I've made really meaningful connections with people who I've never met face to face. And when I designed the expansion for Zaya, the first expansion, it's called Embers of a Forsaken Star, and someone who was previously a backer, Ira Fay, he called me up and he's like, "Hey, I love your game, and I've got some ideas for doing a solo campaign for Embers of a Forsaken Star." And since then, Ira and I became friends, and he's worked together with me ever since. And so, like, we talk every week, and that's been like an awesome relationship that I never would have had. We've never met face to face, despite all our trying to get together to the same convention and stuff like that. So, yeah.
That's very cool. One other thing I wanted to make sure I made mention of is I find your introduction to board gaming very interesting, because it seems like a number of the guests that I've talked to and people I've met, you know, in this regard, have their introduction has always been like Dungeons and Dragons, and then it's been or some other tabletop role playing game, and then it's a transition over into the board gaming side. But for you, to start with the video gaming aspect, and I think a lot of that kind of comes through in the design of Zaya. Like the game itself isn't a video game in board game form, but you can see a lot of parallels between that and the fact that, you know, it's a sandbox game, which to my knowledge, there are very, very few of those, or very few that have successfully been able to encapsulate that style and that genre within board gaming. So I think that's very cool and very fascinating.
Yeah. I actually, as far as D&D goes, my primary experience is like the Neverwinter Nights.
Oh, sure.
Or like Baldur's Gate, or like the CRPGs. And so, I actually played D&D for the first time. I played like a modded version of like the 3.5 rules that my friends were building, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It really hasn't been that long. And then I'm only just started in, my friend David is running a campaign, and it started late last year or early this year. I forget. Sorry, David. But that's the first time I've actually played D&D. Proper. So, not a lot of RPG experience in the traditional way.
Right. That's very cool. And so let's go ahead. We've kind of gotten to know you a little bit. We've figured out where you came from and your great success story getting into board gaming, and the fact that you're doing it full time is Once again, it's inspiring, I think, because it's very cool to see that someone who just has the drive and puts the time and effort into it can actually do it. But let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about Zaya. We'll start with that and talk about some of the design aspects in that and see where we go from there. So when you said that, of course, it has changed or it did change a lot over that 9-year journey. So where did it start? Like, did you start off saying to yourself, I want to make a game that's a sandbox game? I want there to be multiple paths to victory. I want it to be all viable because I haven't seen that. Or what? Where did you go on that route?
Yeah, it was very simple, and I didn't have like I said, I hadn't discovered Board Game Geek yet, and so my vernacular was very limited. So I wouldn't have had I wouldn't have said multiple paths to victory or anything like that. Sandbox, I think, was probably the word that I knew of just in playing video games. So video games like Freelancer and this little game on Macintosh called Escape Velocity were some really big influences for me, where they were games where basically you just start out in a little space shuttle and you can run missions and you can fight and you can do whatever you want and you just get bigger, better ships. And so I had played that Dread Pirate game and I thought, oh, I wonder if there's a spaceship version of this, because I'm a huge sci-fi nerd. Star Wars. And so that was basically where my heart went, was just, I want to play a sci-fi game. And then I looked, and I, like I said, I didn't know Board Game Geek, so I didn't find like Merchant of Venus. It was just like local board game stores. And at the time, they were not thriving as much as they are now. And so the selection was really limited. It's like, okay, apples to apples, that's cool. But there wasn't a game that really filled that need. I didn't find Merchants and Marauders. And I think, so I just started making the game that I wanted to play, I guess. So I was like, I want to have spaceships and they need to look cool. So like the first thing I did was get a bunch of Fimo clay from the craft store. And I made like 20 or 30 spaceship miniatures and painted them. And then I was like, okay, This is the starting point. And if you're doing board game design, probably not the best place to start is with the miniatures. But I had no ideas. I was just having, I mean, it's just a lot of fun, like a hobby to do. And so I feel like the key thing I learned was the thing that has really carried me through, and I think the skill that has really helped me, is iteration is key for design. If you're designing a board game, at least the way I design, I need to play it and then I need to iterate on it and play it again and iterate on it. And so I feel like Zaya plays the way it does is because it has hundreds of iterations behind it, where I would try something and it would not work. It would fail spectacularly. Like, I remember the first time I sat down to play it with my wife, Abby, the board was on a piece of plywood. And all the planets were little circles, and I had taken a Sharpie and drawn lines connecting them all, so it looked kind of like a star map or something like that. And I don't know if I can hear you anymore.
Oh, sorry. Am I?
Am I still coming through?
You are coming through. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Good.
And so, yeah, so this piece of plywood, and we sat down and I started explaining the rules to her, and about halfway through, her eyes sort of glazed over and she said very kindly, she said, I think maybe you have too many rules to play. And like, I had so many rules, because just in my head, I just wanted to have this like simulation of space. And it took me a long time to figure out how to do like, to do a simulation in a board game is much different than a video game, because in a video game, you can have background processes that run without anybody having to put brain power on it. That's what your CPU is doing. But in a board game, the design constraint is everything that you want to run has to run inside of somebody's mind. And so that became a really fun constraint of like, okay, how can I do a simulation as light as possible so that it achieves the goal of simulating whatever it is, whether it's an outlaw bounty system or if it's like traveling between planets, and how can I make those things like dynamic, functional, and not require like require the minimum amount of brain space so that you could do for a sandbox game, you want to have a lot of things going on. And so each individual element needs to be like super optimized, I guess, for lack of a better word. And so each iteration, like working on eliminating anything that wasn't absolutely necessary. And I mean, I think with any creative process, you could probably go on indefinitely. And it was really good for me that Zaya, it was like, well, I was graduating college when I put it on Kickstarter. And so it was like, I need to either go get a job or get this thing on Kickstarter. And so Abby let me put it on Kickstarter before I went and got a real job. And so it was good that I had that moment in time that I had to finish for. Otherwise, I would probably still be working on Zaya. So not to say that it's a perfect game, but as far as like how everything got designed the way it was, that was always my goal.
Awesome.
I feel like I'm rambling at this point, so you should probably
all right,
redirect me.
I'll come to your rescue here. That's very cool, and that does segue nicely into another point I wanted to bring up, and the idea, and of course, once I found out about it, which was after the initial Kickstarter, I personally got into it, and when I start to obsess over something, which is what I do, I start to read
like,
everything. Yeah, so I went on Board Game Geek, and I'm reading all the posts and stuff, and of course, you know, you get a good degree of things reading reviews. There's a lot of very fair critics out there, which is excellent. And you get a lot of people who are throwing out just a lot of bile because that's what they do.
On the internet?
I know, right? It seems odd, but I've seen it. but no, so some of the criticisms that I would read about it, of course, was that, you know, it's not a perfect system. And and then conversely, what some people thought was a great selling point to the game is what a lot of people also thought was a big negative. And that would be that the game is very modular, very customizable. And you personally have been very upfront about saying, hey, play the game how you want. If there's something really cool that you do, tell me. I want to know. Because I want to try it too and see how it plays. And so, you know, to the cynic out there, that looks like a game that wasn't fully play tested, that wasn't really thought through. They don't realize you spent 9 years iterating it over and over and over. But I think that speaks to the kind of game that it is, and some really cool revisions and additional modular pieces came into being because of some of people's some of the variants that people came up with, and those came out in the Embers expansion.
That was something that was really fun to do. Like I said, I would still be working on Zaya today, and in fact I kind of am, because we have the second expansion is in production right now, which is called Missions and Powers, and it's a deck of missions and new ship powers.
I'm very impatiently waiting. Yes.
Yeah. And I think sort of the nature of Zaya is that you could go on infinitely. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a fun system to play with. I feel like my experience with it largely has been like, I'll teach someone to play, we'll play a game, and afterwards they will want to tell me, like, hey, have you thought about, and then they'll launch into, like, here's something awesome you can do. And for some reason, Zaya just sparks people's creativity. Mm-hmm. It's like, I see what you, like, what if we did, you know, XYZ? And it's just such a fun space to play around in. Mm-hmm. And, so the expansion was just a way for me to go back. Like, from a business perspective, I dislike when companies, I don't want to project on other companies. I don't want to be the kind of company that, like, hey, if I can get money, I'm going to do this thing and until people hate it, and then we'll move on to the next thing. Like, I want to try and do right by people. Mm-hmm. And, like, what feels good to me as a business is doing a good job with what I'm given. And so for the expansion, I really didn't want to do it just to do an expansion. Like, as soon as I was in production, backers were like, hey, what's the next thing? Are you doing more? And it was like, you haven't even played the game yet. Like, yeah, but you could do so many more planets and all this stuff. And like, it's very easy to imagine things that I could do, but I felt like I really wanted to wait and see how things were received and what would really add to the game. And so Embers was, let's see, 2016. So like 2 years after Zaya hit. And so I had read a bunch on forums and had learned so much about game design. In the meantime, I had started working on Iridia. Like, as soon as Zaya went into print in 2013, like, as soon as we started manufacturing, I just started working on, like, okay, if I'm going to do this full time, I need to make more games. And so I started working on Iridia at that time, which is like 5 years ago now. Mm. But I had learned so much, and then thought, okay, we need to do something because Iridia is not ready and everybody wants a Zaya expansion. And then I had sort of put something out on BoardGameGeek, hey, I'm going to be doing an expansion. What ideas do you guys have? What would you like to see? And I had a lot of ideas of my own, but I just wanted to sort of, like, it's been such a community mm-hmm. experience for me. Like, all the people in the Kickstarter and on BoardGameGeek, just, like, having so many ideas that it felt really great to, like, do some of the design in public. And still saving, I feel like, the majority of it was a lot, like, saved for, as a surprise, kind of. Mm-hmm. So, but, yeah. So, like, one of the things was the economy board, which people, that was probably the biggest issue people had with the original game or the base game is that trade routes can be easily exploited.
Right.
And especially if you're playing in a group that does not want to engage in combat. Mm-hmm. And so my playtest pool for the original game, much smaller than is available to me now, just people weren't into board games as much, and especially my friends. And I mean, I blind tested it with people all around, but not nearly as big of a pool as I can draw from at this point. And so the people playing Zaya were all Americans and tended to be more aggressive than not than sure. passive. And so, like, short trade routes, as soon as someone saw a short trade route, it was like everybody just pulls out their guns and like, go for it. And so it sort of balanced itself out. But if you're especially like in Europe, people were, you know, hey, if you have a trade route and nobody attacks you, you can win very easily. Yes. But people will attack you and they're like, no, not in our group. Like, okay, that's interesting. and so just having that diversity of cultures and the way people think about games and what they want out of games, that really fed into Embers of a Forsaken Star, allowing us to sort of address that. So the economy board is one thing that now there's like a functioning economy where you can buy and sell, but a trade route will go bad, or, you know, there won't be any demand and you'll have to move on. And so it just makes trade that much more fun and dynamic and fits the sandbox world. And there's new areas like ice asteroids and comets. And one thing that I had wanted to put, so the economy board and the event deck were two things that I had like set up for the base game, but feedback was like, hey, you've got so much stuff, you've got to cut some of it. And so the economy board and the event deck were two things that were designed, not as designed as well as they are in Embers, but they were like, the ideas of those were set and ready to go. It was like, no, we're going to not do those. And so those two things I really got to work on and put implement in the expansion. So like the event deck is really fun, where just like every game you're going to come up with, you know, two or three events that happen that sort of dynamically change the entire game for everybody. So like, oh, there's a race going on, and if you don't participate in the race, probably going to be in trouble. So now we're flying from point to point to try and earn some free fame points. And yeah, there's just a lot of really weird stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. The one where you actually switch map tiles every turn is phenomenal. I love when that one comes up. I know other people that I play with are, you know, growing a little bit because, but it just, and inevitably it's a tile that you're either going to next turn or that you're on and you're one tile away from the point you want to hit next turn, and it gets shipped away across the galaxy. I love it.
Yeah, I feel like Embers has provided a good amount of content. Like, the feedback has been so positive from it that people really felt like it addressed all the issues that they had. I mean, obviously, Zaya is not a game for everyone. If you're looking for a deep Euro, not Zaya.
Right.
But the people who wanted to play Zaya, I felt like it really hit all the whatever's that people were looking for. Yeah, all the bullet points. I feel very proud of it. And then with missions and powers, the expansion, Ira actually came up to me because he said, hey, we're out of Zaya. This was last year. He said, we're out of Zaya. We need to do a reprint. And so we're going to do a Kickstarter. And Ira said, hey, Cody, I think if you're doing a Kickstarter, people who already have backed Zaya and Embers are going to really want to have something. And at that time, I was building a house which contains this new office. And I was like, I know, I literally don't have the time, because I was in the rain, like swinging a hammer every day. And so Ira said, hey, let me design this. I'll take point. And so he did. And I was definitely consulting on every part of it, but Ira really spearheaded that whole thing. And it's such a great, I think it provides such a great, like the amount of replayability you get out of just a deck of cards is really great, I think. Just because every ship now, when you buy a ship, you have a choice between these two powers, and they act, some of them act similarly, some of them are very different. I actually just played, what day is it? I just played a few days ago with my friends here in the office, and that was the first time that they had got to play Missions and Powers with the final version. And that was really fun, just to see everybody of course chose the new powers instead of the old ones.
Right.
And just seeing how those work, it just changes the game so much. And then like having those in concert with the old powers, like, there's just so many choices. It just feels really good for a deck of cards. Like, I feel very proud of the work that Ira and I put into that. So.
Yeah, no, I was really happy to see that, because that's one of the things that happens after you play a game over and over and over, is that you get used to, here's this ship and here's this power, and there are so many combinations. If you take this as your tier one ship, and then you take this as your tier two, and so on, you get a different string of powers to use. But yeah, it's a very easy way to add that variety without having to create, you know, 12 more ships, which means 12 more miniatures, which is all that extra design time into that, extra cost into creating those, which, don't get me wrong, if you want to put out 12 more ships, I'm on board. But, like you said, for a deck of cards, it's going to add so much. I'm impatiently waiting for it, but I'm not going to bust you over this, but because I mean, just got the update today that unfortunately it did delay a little bit, but it's like 2 weeks or something, right? It's not that big of a delay.
It's not that bad, but still it feels bad to, I don't want to delay at all. I want, like, I see people developing video games and they can, like, as soon as they're done, you can just put it on Steam.
Right.
But it's months between finishing something and then waiting and waiting and waiting. It's really hard. So thank you, everybody who's waiting patiently. I'm so sorry.
Well, I think everybody would want it done right, because if you released it with the color discrepancy that there was, you know, people, that's something people would have a problem with, because they're like, well, now I have to sleeve my cards if they don't already sleeve them. And so I think most people in this day and age are pretty willing to wait a little bit to make sure that they get it and it gets done right.
Yeah, I was just reading the comments from that post, and people are seeming very understanding. And a lot of my business decisions I try and run by, like, what, because I'm on Kickstarter a lot and I back a lot of projects, like, how do I want to be treated as a backer? And for me, it's almost always, I would prefer to have the better product in the long run, especially if it's something that I really like.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather wait. It's fine. Not to be whatever, but there are a lot of games to play.
Yes.
In the meantime, it's like, there's so many games. I have games in shrink wrap that, you know, I'm like, I really want to get to this. And game night's only once a week at this point. So it kind of makes it tough. But anyways,
Well, I'm going to go ahead and we're going to switch gears to make sure we have some time to talk about Iridia before we run out of our allotted time frame here. Even though I could talk about Zaya for another couple hours. So maybe I'll manage to finagle another podcasting session with you sometime. But for tonight, let's go ahead and dive into that. Go ahead and tell us a bit about this, your next upcoming game, possibly coming to Kickstarter sometime in the near future, hopefully.
So Iridia is a game that I've wanted to make. Like, after Zaya, this is the game that I've really wanted to make. It is a, I don't know if you want the spiel, but it's a open world, cooperative, campaign based role playing game. And so not role playing game in that you get a book and good luck. My goal is to make a game where everything you need is in the box and it's all been prepared. So 5 years ago, when I started designing this, my friends were like, hey, we've never played Dungeons and Dragons. We should play it. And I thought, this will be awesome. And so I started doing a bunch of research and I was like, well, I'm just going to like do a pre-made thing. And I was looking and I couldn't find something that did what I wanted. It was like, wow, this is, and just doing a lot of research, it's like, you need to do a lot of preparation to play Dungeons and Dragons, especially if you're the dungeon master. I'm assuming you have some D&D or role-playing experience. Is that right, Josh?
I do, yes.
And do you DM?
I have. I've not been able to play or DM recently because I have a full-time job and a family and adult responsibilities.
Yeah.
Gosh darn it.
This is exactly it. So this is pretty much the impetus behind Iridia is like, I really want to play Dungeons and Dragons. Like, I want to have an experience where you're going out and you don't really know what's going to happen. You're going to have some adventure. You're going to earn some loot. You're going to fight somebody and you're going to talk to some NPCs and like make some choices and it'll be fun. And then next week or next month, whenever you get together, you'll like be able to go from that, like, previously, here's what we did, and here's all the stuff. We have it still, and we're going to keep going. And so with Iridia, I wanted to try and capture that of, like, we are experiencing this large story, and we've, you know, made these characters, and we've been role-playing as them from session to session. And these characters get stronger, and we encounter, you know, different villains and all sorts of fun little storylines, and how can I put a D&D game like that into a box? That was sort of my thought. How can I put a role-playing game like that into a box that is so that you can have a role-playing experience? Obviously, it has to be dumbed down some, but a role-playing experience where no one has to be the DM, where you can, it'll carry over from session to session, and it's compatible with married and children life, where it's like, I don't have a lot of time to prepare anything. I want to just sit down and I want to play a game with my friends and have it be fun. And so that has been my goal with Iridia. And in the meantime, there's been some awesome games that have come out, like Gloomhaven, which has done a fantastic job of sort of capturing that. I haven't got to play it yet, but Ira tells me it's great. Other games like Seventh Continent, where you're just exploring and the setup and teardown time is super minimal. And so, I think other people feel that desire for games to do more than just like, it doesn't remember me. And I think a big, obviously, the elephant in the room is legacy games.
Right.
Pandemic Legacy, and we just finished Pandemic Legacy season one. I've got Pandemic Legacy season two. We're looking forward to that. Risk Legacy. Super awesome. Like, some of those experiences are like, we still talk about those, and those were years ago. And so I'm wanting to, with Iridia, try and do my own take on all of those sorts of ideas. I wanted to do, Iridia, I'm dubbing it a green legacy game. Mm-hmm. And sort of my goal is, like with legacy games, you have things that you expect, like you want to open packages and be surprised, like I don't know what's gonna happen next. Sometimes you experience things just once in the course of a campaign. And so I'm trying to, in the best way that I feel for this game, to try and capture those things, but also to make them so that when you're done with the campaign, you can fully reset it. Mm-hmm. And so that, I don't know, there's something for me that I really want Iridia, like, to sit on the shelf. And when you look at it, it's like, this is something that is an heirloom style game where it's like, yeah, I love this game so much, I don't want to get rid of it. I played through it with all my friends, and then maybe you loaned it to somebody and they played through it and you got it back. And then it's like, when my kids are older, I want to play through it with them. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, it's not going to be like Zaya, where it's like, it's not a sandbox game. So it's not like, okay, you shuffle it up and everything's different every time. It's going to be more like playing through, computer role-playing games, so like like a Baldur's Gate kind of experience, or like I said, Neverwinter Nights, like those sorts of experiences that informed my youth, where it's like, oh, I love leveling up and getting loot, and I lost my train of thought.
That's all right. No, that sounds excellent.
It's hard because I can't see you, so I can't. Oh. I don't know if you're like making faces at me or what.
I'm following along and nodding and making silent gestures to show that I'm paying attention. So just believe that that I'm with you 100%.
Gotcha.
But no, I understand exactly what you mean, because not being able to commit to a role-playing session once a week or once a month even, and be able to really stick with that, and of course all the prep time, because most likely I would probably be the one DMing with my friends and stuff. This has a lot of appeal. To capture some of that feeling and that gameplay, but still have it be, you know, something you can bring out and play, and then you can put it back on the shelf. And then if you get to it in 2 weeks, great. And if not, then it's still there for you. You know, you don't feel like you have to keep it up like that.
Yeah. Although I'm hoping that after your first play session, you really want to get back to it.
Well, like I said, I tend to obsess, so chances are.
So it has been, I mean, it's been a design, I don't want to say challenge because that's the wrong word. It has definitely been a design challenge, but just from a design standpoint, it has been so fun because a lot of the time I've spent in designing, like those 5 years, has been working on systems that allow me to tell stories in a manageable way. Like I was kind of like I was talking about in Zaya, trying to optimize things so you don't need to spend a lot of brain power to remember finicky rules. Like the things that you want to do have to be really refined so that when you're playing the game, you're thinking about, this is really fun. I did this, you know, X cool thing or Y cool thing, rather than like, oh, I forgot to tabulate this spreadsheet. Or, you know, oh, hang on, we've got to go back three turns because we forgot this rule. That I just want to, like, it needs to be a really clean experience. Mm-hmm. And the game needs to remember what you've done and be easy to set up. And there's just been a lot of design challenges I've set for myself that have been really fun to work around. And, like, the system that I have designed, I feel like, it's still in progress, but the skeleton of this system, like the framework of it, is going to be so cool. Like, I think, you could do a lot of cool things with it, beyond Iridia, but that's for another day.
Yeah. one project at a time.
One project. I know that's the thing. Like, I have Google Docs with just design ideas where it's like, I could do all these things if only I had time. So yeah, but I don't know, is there,
well, yeah, I guess we're kind of running up against the end of our time here for today, which is a bummer because we're getting into more territory that I could easily pick your brain about for the next couple hours. But like I said, I don't want to ruin your throat there. We'll let you get some rest, take your Zycam and a glass of orange juice and get some rest. But so real quick with Iridia, mm-hmm. Do you have a projected date at this point or time frame? You know, we're not going to hold you to anything specific, but when you're expecting to get it to Kickstarter.
So this is actually what is – so because Iridia is a game that has not been designed before, it's really difficult to make projections. And so at the start of the year, I thought, hey, we'd be able to have a Kickstarter by the summer. That should be fine. Terrible at projecting. just because I really, really want to do it right. And so a couple things happened. One, really want to do it right. And two, the Zaya Kickstarter campaign that we ran this year for Missions and Powers was way more successful than I had ever anticipated, which was awesome, which gives us basically the money I have is, since I'm not working for a company, I work for myself, basically the money I have is basically a sand timer. Yes. And so it goes down, and then if we have a Kickstarter, it goes up, and it's like, oh, we have more time to design games. And so trying to be realistic about that, I hired my friend David is now working for me part-time, and so that took time to train him. And anyways, there's a variety of reasons why we didn't hit the Kickstarter this summer. As far as when it may be, right now we are like in active development on it and trying to, I don't want to say something and break people's hearts.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So as of this point, it's not going to be 2018 because we've, like, I don't want to be in the Essen window where everybody's announcing all their games. I don't want to be in December when people are on holiday. And so the earliest it would be probably the end of January or early February. That's the earliest it would be. I'm honestly working as hard as I can on it. like, I'm trying not to, I've got three kids and a wife, so I'm trying to do a good work-life balance, but it's really hard because it's so much. It's so exciting, honestly. I end up working on it beyond my normal hours a lot. So 2019, so right now, do we need to go? Do we have a hard?
There's not a really hard stop. We've got a little bit of time.
So just one more minute. So right now we've done like a this is not super high resolution, but you can see like this corkboard back here has bunch of words on it. Those are all like milestones that we need to hit for Iridia. And so this is like in the past couple weeks, me and David and Ira like meeting and talking and trying to figure out when we can run the Kickstarter campaign. There's a lot of logistics that go behind it. Like, hey, if you want to get a movie and you want to have it made by someone, you've got to like submit like finished art and everything 3 months in advance. So it's like, okay, we've got to like figure all these things out. And do you know what a Gantt chart is of just like, I think it's Gantt. Where anyways, just like contingencies of what things have to happen for other things to happen. So I am not a great businessman. I really love making games, but I'm not great at like running logistics and figuring out these things. I can do it and it takes me time, probably more than someone who's specialized. So this is part of the reason why I've got David on board and Ira helping out is like helping me project these things. And so it's currently like in process, like when can we do it? And when we have a date, I will definitely be letting everybody know, like we will have a full marketing push, like, yay, go, it's gonna be this time and it'll be on Kickstarter. But
excellent.
Well, yeah, sorry, not super specific, Josh.
Oh, that's okay. You know, I feel the need to ask because, you know, looking at the Board Game Geek forums, there's a definite interest in the game and some excitement for it. So I felt it my duty to try and weasel some information out of you here tonight.
But, yeah. If you're on Board Game Geek, I post on there and I drop little tidbits of like, hey, here's what I'm working on and stuff like that. So you can feel free to check the Iridia forum. I'm on there a lot. Anything that gets posted, I read it. Obsessively.
Excellent. Yeah. We've had a fellow in the chat here since the start of it. Goes under the name Cyberpunk Guitar. You might be seeing the chat yourself there. And he was just wondering.
I turned it off because it's like a few seconds behind.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Distracting.
Very much.
Hello, Cyberpunk Guitar. What's up, man? Or lady.
He had he or she, I guess. Yeah, I shouldn't assume. They had a question asking if Iridia shares any similarities to Runebound or Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Well, does it share similarities? I think so. I have not played either of those, though I know of them. And I know some of their rule sets. A little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, so Iridia is set in a fantasy world, mm-hmm. so it shares that similarity. You are going on adventures, and you're able to... So Iridia has four pillars. One is exploration. The next is combat. The third is progression, and the fourth is role play. And so in a very broad sense, it definitely... Like almost anything in the fantasy genre, it's gonna like overlap. That's a huge is a Venn diagram, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So those overlapping circles diagram, it's gonna have a lot of overlap. I think if you're wondering like why would I want this if I already own X, Y, or Z, it's gonna be my own take on the genre, mm-hmm. and it will be telling a unique story in a way that I find exciting and appealing. So I don't know how else to say it. Like, I think good games in the genre can stand on their own. Like, there's a reason why it's great to read Lord of the Rings and it's also great to read Harry Potter.
Right.
Like, if something's well crafted, I think I think the craftsmanship should show through. And so that's sort of my goal with Iridia is like, yeah, there are going to be things that are going to overlap in the fantasy genre. That's just how it is. But I feel like I'm going to do my best to make Iridia worth owning.
Yes.
For the best that I can do, where this is like, wow, there are some reasons that I really want this. And hopefully my goal is when you see the Kickstarter page, when you open it up, that it is mouthwatering to you. That it looks very delicious, something that you really want to have. So I'll do my best.
Excellent.
To do that.
Well, and, yeah. Cyberpunk Guitar says they're getting it anyway. And Warwag just popped in to say that they love Zaya and can't wait for the new game. So you've already got two backers.
Yes. Awesome. We can do this.
Excellent. All right. Well, unfortunately, that is going to bring us up to the end of our time together for tonight. Cody, it's been absolutely awesome getting to meet you and talk with you and go through some of this stuff. It's
likewise, really Josh. Fun. Likewise.
So why don't you go ahead and let us know where people can find you and or far off games so that we can make sure we get you out there as much as we can.
Yeah. So you can find me. I'm on Twitter at Far Off Games. I think we're on Instagram at Far Off Games and Facebook.com/FarOffGames. And if you want to sign up for our newsletter, it's at faroffgames.com. We also have like a, you can find me on the Zaya forums on BoardGameGeek or the Iridia forums. I subscribe to all my games. also Tavarua, which is on sale. We put it on sale just this week because we're really low on stock and David wanted to get them out the door because of Amazon has like this weird scoring system. Anyways, so it is on sale and it's a great game. You should take the Dice Hate Me's word on that. They gave it the game of the year, but it's on sale right now.
Excellent.
And I think, yeah, that's everything. You can find me on Kickstarter, obviously.
Right. Yes. And hopefully they will sometime around the beginning of next year. Maybe we'll see where that ends up, but sign up for the newsletter and you'll get the updates on when Iridia is coming to Kickstarter and all that good stuff. And I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk about Tavarua because that's another one I haven't had a chance to play, but I've looked into it a bit and it does have an interesting, another unique theme. You don't see surfing very often.
It's the black sheep of the family.
All right. Well, a little bit of housekeeping for us here on the DoxCast. We record at Paradox Comics and Cards here in Fargo, North Dakota. We try to do a block of podcasts roughly once a month, and we put them out live on Twitch and our Facebook page, and then we release them every Monday on iTunes. It's under the DoxCast, as well as ParadoxCNC.com. You can find us at ParadoxCNC on Twitter, ParadoxCNC on Instagram, the aforementioned Facebook page. I think that about covers it for that. So we do thank each and every one of you for joining us, whether you are live with us in the chat here or listening later. We hope that you've enjoyed this podcast, and we'll tune in for more. I believe next Tuesday, which will be the 23rd, yes, I believe the 23rd of October. I'm so bad with dates. It's like not that hard.
Same here.
It's like 5 days away. we'll be recording some more podcasts here, so we hope you tune in live to join us for those. But, I think that's about where we'll want to leave it for tonight. So, Cody, thank you once again. We'll chat a little bit more here in offline, but hopefully we can maybe get you back again as Iridia is getting closer to Kickstarter and we can get some more information and try to hype it up a little for you. So
sounds good to me. Thank you so much for having me on the show, by the way. It was awesome. You've been a great host.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And fantastic. You said it live, so you can't take it back.
No, definitely
not. Edit it out. All right. Well, thanks again, folks. Of course, we will see you on the next DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time, geek on.